737 or mts.edu.
I am not ashamed of the gospel. This is what the Apostle Paul wrote. I am not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. First for the Jew, then for the Gentile. And there's a sequence there. First for the Jew. So salvation comes first for the Jewish people. Of course, so does judgment from God. But we're just thankful that salvation comes to the Jew first and also to the Greek. And when you hear Romans 1:16, you know you've tuned in to Jesus Made Me Kosher. We want to welcome you today. Thank you so much for listening in. Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael. And we're coming to you live today, Rabbi Glenn with you, live from the spacious and congenial studios of Faith Talk 1500. And I've decided that today's going to be Talk to Me Tuesday. So I've invited friends, and now I invite you, my unseen friends, to call in if you have questions or you want to opine on something in the news, something about Israel or the Jewish people, maybe about the election, anything. So we're going to have the phone lines open, and we'll take your calls. If you'd like to call in with a question or an observation, or you want to just pick my brain about something, the number is 866-423-9578. Again, that's 866-423-9578, which equals WLQV. Isn't that really cool? Well, there's all kinds of things on my mind today. One of the things I've been thinking about, and I opined about it on Facebook, is still the fact that I am not watching the Olympics. Now, it kind of pains me to not be watching the Olympics because, quite honestly, I have always loved watching the Olympic Games. I admire the fact that you have men and women who train for years and years, all for a few moments of time. And it's all on, you know, it all hinges on their performance in those few minutes. So I can really appreciate a life's investment, of course, you know, for a medal, which you can't take it with you to heaven anyway. But I respect that. And, you know, I always want to root for the United States athletes, but I'm not watching this year. And the reason I'm not watching is because the International Olympic Committee made a decision. Now, some of you may not know this, particularly our younger listeners to Jesus Made Me Kosher, but in 1972, at this very time, at the Munich Olympics, 11 Israeli athletes were first taken hostage and then later massacred by a terrorist group called Black September, which was a wing of the Palestine Liberation Organization, or PLO. 11 Israeli athletes were slaughtered, murdered in cold blood by this terrorist organization at the Munich Olympic Games in 1972. And so this is the 40th year since that time. You would think that to ask for 1 minute of quiet remembrance about that tragedy would not be too much to ask. But apparently the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, considered it too much to ask. They refused to allow 1 minute for silent remembrance of the 11 Israeli athletes. And if they won't give 1 minute to that, I won't give them 1 minute of my viewing time. Now, I'm not judging anybody who's watching the Olympics. I'm simply saying that because of my awareness and the impropriety of the IOC's actions, I'm not watching the Olympics. And I know there's a few others who feel the same way. Maybe you have an opinion on that. But it reminded me, as I thought about that, of the Book of Lamentations, where Jeremiah the prophet just weeps and just grieves to the core of his being over what has happened to Jerusalem, what has happened to Israel, the destruction of Jerusalem and of the temple. And he laments the fact that the rest of the world seems completely indifferent to her plight. And he writes in Lamentations 1:12, "Is it nothing to you, all you who pass by? Look around and see. Is any suffering like my suffering that was inflicted on me? that the Lord brought on me in the day of his fierce anger. You know, is it nothing to the rest of the world that 11 Israeli athletes were murdered in cold blood? Is it too much to ask that they be remembered? Is it too much to ask that we call it to mind so that things like this will never happen again? I guess apparently it's too much to ask. And so my take on this is that the IOC equals the UN. There's just an innate hostility toward Jews and toward Israel, toward Zionism. So again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher. Rabbi Glenn with you today, coming to you live from the studios of Faith Talk 1500. We are going to take your phone calls. If you would like to call in, and the number again is 866-423-9578. Just a little passing thing. You know, I really enjoy radio. It's just a very enjoyable medium. I like talking about the things that are on my heart. I like hearing from you. Hint, hint. But it's a very enjoyable medium. But I know full well that I don't really have that kind of radio voice. And how do you guys feel? Is there somebody, if you could have their voice, anybody's voice in the world, you can think of an actor or somebody who's on Broadway or a Shakespearean actor, somebody whose voice you wish you had? Here's the person's voice that I wish I had.
Class warranties to back it all up. Sounds like you just hit the jackpot.
You recognize that voice? That's the voice of Sam Elliott, who's been in I can't remember how many movies, from Ghost Rider to Roadhouse to Mask. And I guess he's also doing a commercial voiceover for Chrysler, Dodge trucks and stuff like that. I wish I had that deep, gravelly voice, but I don't. But if I could have somebody else's voice, that's the voice I'd have. Okay, enough about that. Want to share with you a story today. This in a series of stories that we are sharing with you, our Jesus Made Me Kosher audience, from a little magazine called Good News, published in Johannesburg, South Africa. This one is the special Rabbi's edition, and it's called that because there are about 20 or 25 rabbis from centuries ago through the present time who became believers and followers in Jesus of Nazareth. They came to believe that Yeshua, Jesus, is the promised Messiah of Israel. So here and there, we've been reading some of these stories, and it's so encouraging to know, because the claim is that no educated Jewish person would ever believe in him, in J, as he's called by Jewish people who despise him and don't even want to say his name. No educated Jewish person would ever believe in him. You'd have to be a drug addict, or you'd have to be dysfunctional, or you'd have to have some kind of mental deficiency to believe, as a Jew, to believe in him. Meanwhile, so he's okay for everybody else, but not for us Jews? That's called a double standard, folks. Anyway, the claim that no educated Jewish person, no rabbis ever believed in him, and if they did, there was something wrong with them, that claim is patently false. It's false on its face. I want to read you the story of Rabbi Isaac Lichtenstein. This story is told by Henry Einsbruch, Doctor of Divinity, many years ago. And here's how it goes. And by the way, folks, again, we're reading a story to you, but we'd love to hear from you today. It's Talk to Me Tuesday with Rabbi Glenn. You can get online at 866-423-9578. Maybe you have a question about Jewish people or a Jewish friend you're trying to reach, or about something in the news, what's going on in Israel or at the Olympics. All right, Rabbi Isaac Lichtenstein. He was not yet 20 years old when he became a rabbi. And after officiating for several years in different communities through northern Hungary, Isaac Lichtenstein finally settled as district rabbi, where he remained for nearly 40 years, laboring ceaselessly and unselfishly for the good of his people. So here's a young man, 20 years old, and he's already a rabbi. So that means this guy's a prodigy. He's brilliant. Well, it goes on. Early in his ministry, a Jewish teacher in the communal school of his district casually showed him a German Bible. Turning the leaves, his eye fell on the name Jesu Christi. he became furiously angry and sharply rebuked the teacher for having such a thing in his possession. Taking the book, he flung it across the room in a rage. It fell behind others on a shelf where, dusty and forgotten, it lay some 30-odd years. So Rabbi Lichtenstein, eminent rabbi, chief rabbi, in his district in Hungary. He's furious. He throws this Bible across the room. It lands, you know, behind a shelf. It's gathering dust for 30 years. About that time, a fierce wave of anti-Semitism broke out in Hungary, culminating in what is now historic, I may be mispronouncing it, the Tisza Esler affair. In that picturesque little Hungarian town situated on the Theiss River, 12 Jews and a Jewish woman were thrown into prison, accused of having killed a Christian girl in order to use her blood for ritual purposes. The most tragic part of the case being that a little Jewish boy who had been kept some time from his parents by the police commissary was prevailed on by threats and cruelties to appear as the chief witness against his own father and recite a concocted circumstantial tale of the supposed murdered girl. So they trump up these false charges that the Jewish people used this little Christian girl's blood to make matzah for Passover. And for the record, folks, matzah is made up of two things, flour and water. Okay? That's it. So this wave of anti-Semitism fueled by a false charge of the blood libel against the Jewish people starts in Hungary, breaks out. 12 Jewish men and a Jewish woman are thrown into prison and charged with murder. As in every other case in which this diabolical charge was ever brought against the Jewish people, the blood accusation there was ultimately demonstrated to be false and baseless. It remains to the glory of true religion that a number of prominent Christian men, notably Dr. Franz Delitzsch, of the famous Kyle and Delitzsch commentaries on the scriptures of the Leipzig University, rose to the occasion not only to defend the Jews, but also to tear the mask from all who by their acts scandalized Christ in the eyes of Jewry. In other words, these false Christians who brought this charge. We're going to take up this story of what happened with Rabbi Lichtenstein during that time and shortly after. But we do have a call. We do want to take your calls. Again, folks, if you have a question for me, you can get online. It's area code 866-423-9578. And we want to take a call from Mike calling in from Garden City. Mike, welcome to Jesus Made Me Kosher.
Hello. First time caller, but I had a quick question I wanted to ask you. You interviewed somebody last week who was Jewish and became a believer, and it seems like during that conversation the idea of a Jewish Roman road was brought up where you can use the Old Testament exclusively. Could you kind of list those scriptures for me?
Well, there's a number of scriptures that you could use from the Old Testament, from the Tanakh, as we call it. If you have a Jewish person who is willing to look at the scriptures with you, you can look at, for example, Isaiah chapter 9, verses 1 through 7. You could look at Isaiah chapter 42. Isaiah chapter 49 also speaks of this servant. You could start at the beginning. You could look at Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, and see that that there was going to be this coming seed of the woman, a singular descendant of the woman who will eventually undo the works of Satan. You could look at Deuteronomy 18, verses 15 through 19, where Moses speaks of a prophet who will be very much like him, a singular prophet in Israel, to whom the people of Israel must give obedience, and he will speak the words of God. Again, Deuteronomy 18, 15 through 19. Isaiah chapter 52, 13 through all of chapter 53 is a very graphic portrayal of the sufferings of the Messiah. And you can see very clearly there a distinction of pronouns. He, the Messiah, but there's also we, and we meaning the Jewish people, because it's Isaiah, a Jew, writing this. And and you can also go into Zechariah chapter 12, where verses 1 through 10, the Messiah will be shown to be one who was pierced. by his own nation. So there's just a number of scriptures. Psalm 22 is another good one. So there's a wealth of prophecies, wealth of scriptures for you to take a person to. But Mike, let me say this, and I'm really glad that you called with that question. It's a very worthy question. If you have a Jewish friend who's willing to look at the Bible with you, you can use Old Testament scriptures. But if they're willing to look at the New Testament with you, why take the 40-year journey when you could take the 11-day journey and take them right to the Gospel of John? If you have a friend who's open, then they're open. And if they're not open, then it wouldn't matter where you started. But if they're willing to look at the life of Jesus and consider, is it possible that he fits the bill? Then by all means, feel free to start in the New Testament, one of the Gospels. But really glad you called, Mike. Thanks so much for your call. And thanks for listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher. Let's continue our story with Rabbi Isaac Lichtenstein, who was a preeminent rabbi in Hungary. And somebody had shown him a Bible that had a New Testament in it, and he got furious, and he threw that Bible across the room. It landed behind a bookshelf, and it lay there for the next 30 years, gathering dust, completely forgotten about. So now, there, years later, this fierce wave of anti-Semitism breaks out in Hungary. And let me continue the story. The mental state of Rabbi Lichtenstein at this time is best revealed in what was called the Jewish Mirror. He wrote these words: "Often have they oppressed me from my youth, may Israel say," of course, citing Psalm 129. "No long explanation is needed to show that in these few words the psalmist sums up the bitter experiences and sorrows which we, at least of the older generation, have suffered from our youth at the hands of so-called Christians that surrounded us. Mockery, scorn, blows, and all manner of humiliation have been our portion, even at the hands of Christian children. I remember still the stones which were thrown at us as we left the synagogue, and how when bathing in the river and powerless, we saw them cast our clothing with laughter and insult into the water. Once with sorrow and weeping, I saw my father knocked to the ground without the least hesitation by a nobleman, so-called, because he had not quickly enough made room for him on a narrow path. But these sad experiences are known well enough to need no dwelling on, and would to God that such persecution of the Jews by the Christians," we'll put quotes around that, "were altogether a thing of the forgotten past. As impressions of early life take a deep hold, and as in my riper years I still had no cause to modify these impressions, it is no wonder that I came to think that Christ himself was the plague and the curse of the Jews, the origin and promoter of our sorrows and persecutions. In this conviction, I grew to years of manhood, and still cherishing it, I became old. I knew no difference between true and merely nominal Christianity. Of the fountainhead of Christianity itself, namely Jesus, I knew nothing. Strangely enough, it was the horrible Tischler Esler blood accusation which first drew me to read the New Testament. This trial brought from their lurking places all our enemies, and once again, as in olden times, the cry re-echoed, 'Death to the Jews!' The frenzy was excessive, and among the ringleaders were many who used the name of Christ and his doctrine as a cloak to cover their abominable doings. These wicked practices of men wearing the name of Christ only to further their evil designs aroused the indignation of some true Christians who, with pen on fire and warning voices, denounced the lying rage of the anti-Semites. In articles written by the latter in defense of the Jews, I often met with passages where Christ was spoken of as he who brings joy to man, the Prince of Peace, and the Redeemer. And his gospel was extolled as a message of love and life to all people. I was surprised and scarcely trusted my eyes when I espied in a hidden corner that New Testament which some 30 years earlier I had in anger taken from a Jewish teacher, and I began to turn over its pages and read. How can I express the impression which I then received? Not the half had been told me of the greatness, power, and glory of this book, formerly a sealed book to me. All seemed so new, and yet it did me good, like the sight of an old friend who has laid aside his dusty travel-worn garments and appears now in festive attire like a bridegroom in wedding robes or a bride adorned with her jewels. For 2 or 3 years, Rabbi Lichtenstein kept these convictions secret within him. He began, however, in his synagogue to preach strange and new doctrines, which both interested and astonished his hearers. At last he could contain himself no longer, preaching one Saturday morning from Jesus' parable of the whited sepulcher, he openly avowed that his subject was taken from the New Testament and spoke of Jesus as the true Messiah, the Redeemer of Israel. Ultimately, he embodied his ideas in 3 publications appearing in rapid succession, which created, as you would imagine, a tremendous sensation among the Jews, not only in Hungary, but throughout Europe. And no wonder, for here was an old and learned and respected rabbi still in office, calling upon his people in burning words to range themselves under the banner of the long despised Jesus of Nazareth and to hail him as their true Messiah and King. As was inevitable, no sooner did official Jewish leadership realize the significance of Rabbi Lichtenstein's position and writings than a storm of persecution broke loose upon him. From the Jewish pulpit and in the Jewish press, anathemas were hurled at his head. And he, who a few weeks earlier was considered among the noblest leaders and teachers, was now described as a disgrace and a reproach to his nation, all because he dared pronounce the hated name of Jesus. The calumny, that's a word we don't hear too often anymore, the vitriol, was spread that he had sold himself to the missionaries. In other words, he was paid money to convert. Some even asserted that he had never written the pamphlets himself, but had only been bribed to put his name to them. He was cited to appear before the assembled rabbinate in Budapest. On entering the hall, he was greeted with the cry, "Retract! Retract!" "Gentlemen," said the rabbi, "I shall most willingly retract if you convince me I am wrong." Chief Rabbi Cohen proposed a compromise. Rabbi Lichtenstein might believe whatever he liked in his heart if he would only refrain from preaching Jesus as the Messiah. As to those dreadful pamphlets which he had already written, the mischief could be undone by a very simple process. The Synod of Rabbis would draw up a document to the effect that Rabbi wrote what he did in a fit of temporary insanity, and all that would be required of him would be to add his name to the statement. Well, you can sure guess that he was not prepared to do that. Rabbi Lichtenstein answered calmly but indignantly that this was a strange proposal to make to him, seeing that he had only just come into his right mind. Then they demanded that he should resign his position and be formally baptized. But he replied that he had no intention of joining any church. He had found in the New Testament the true Judaism and would remain, as before, with his congregation and preach it in the synagogue. He did so, and this in spite of many persecutions and reproaches which were heaped upon him. From his official place as district rabbi, he continued to teach and preach from the New Testament. Wow. Well, we could go on, but we have come to the end of our show just about, and I want to be able to give out some information. But Rabbi Isaac Lichtenstein, what a great man, and he suffered greatly for his willingness to publicly declare that Yeshua, Jesus, is the Messiah of Israel. He's the Messiah not only for Jews, but certainly including for Jewish people. If you're a Jewish person listening to this today, please know that he's just one in a long line of esteemed, learned rabbis who, upon willingness to examine the New Testament documents, found in them a Jesus that we had never been told about, the consummate Jew, the ultimate prophet like Moses, the Messiah. Folks, I want to thank you for tuning in today to Jesus Made Me Kosher. Invite you to our website, shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like to learn more, get in touch with us. We'd love to answer your questions. On behalf of Rabbi Lauren and me, Rabbi Glenn, and everybody at Congregation Shema Yisrael, want to wish you shalom, shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.